the fear, the doubt, am I on my deathbed? Is this the last breaths I'm going to be taking this week? However, turning it all around and seeing what gifts it has presented me over the last 17 years, I go, wow, it really was one of the best things that could have happened. What I think is one of the illusions of this term awakening, I think what I've sensed is people think, oh, I'm going to have this profound experience and I'm going to feel awakened and everything's going to be rosy and happy all the time. It is a friggin' messy journey. Awakening is not bliss. It is digging in and unpacking everything that is holding you back from showing up your authentic true self.
Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Stokes. My guest today is John Mailer, joining me from Queensland, Australia. John is the founder of ProTrade United, a business on a mission to transform the culture of construction and trades industry across Australia and New Zealand. Now think about that for a second. One of the most traditionally macho, hard-nosed industries on the planet, and John is in there asking it to grow up. But the reason he's on the podcast has nothing to do with the trades. John's personal story is the kind that makes you stop. A business under financial pressure, a six-month-old daughter, a body that finally says no, a nervous breakdown, and not the metaphorical kind, an actual physical breakdown of his nervous system, leaving him 95% paralyzed and in a hospital bed. He went in as one man, he came out as another. And that's exactly what Mojo Under Fire is about. Not avoiding the valley of despair, not managing your way around the dark night of the soul, but going through it, because on the other side, that's where the gifts are. John and I are in the same men's group for over a year now. So there's a depth and an openness here that I think you'll feel. This is a proper one. I hope you'll love it. Let's jump in. Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. And great to have my guest today, John Mailer. John, amazing to see you, my friend, joining all the way from Queensland, Australia. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Rich. I'm been so excited to have this conversation. I know we've seen each other virtually over the last 12 months every fortnight, and we've exchanged sort of grins and smiles and chat box conversations. Yet, I wake up this morning genuinely excited to have a catch up with you today.
Beautiful, mate. And yeah, we'll get into how we kind of know each other, and we're in a long running men's group together, which will form part of the conversation. And John, I always start here, always look for a bit of a data point from my guests. So your mojo today, that sense of that for you, out of 10, how are you tracking today?
Yeah, listen, and I know you were going to, ask this question. So I've been reflecting on it through the day, and I'm going to say, unapologetically, a 9.5.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Is that for you? Is that, this is pretty, me pretty much all the time, or is this actually I'm tracking a pretty high level today?
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty high level, for me today. And I would say most of the time I'd be an 8, but today was exceptional. Yeah.
Okay. And so you tracked yourself very, new. This is a 9.5 day. So that word mojo, what does that mean to you personally, John?
Yeah. So I would say for me personally, it's how authentically am I living aligned with my true self? Yeah. So through the day, how have I shown up? Have I been authentic? Have I been allocating my energy in places where I can add value and make a difference? And the reason why I said 9.5, I felt I was tracking for a 10, and then I had to spend 45 minutes on the phone with an electricity company negotiating my power bill. And I thought, if there's one thing that's going to took the edge off, it's being online with either, the phone company or the electricity company and dealing with offshore employees who are all doing the very best they can. Yet, 45 minutes, you've timed the tap out.
It could have been another day, used that 45 minutes in a different way, I'm guessing. Or being authentically you, you'd have chosen something else.
But, we're householders, and occasionally we've got to take care of these types of things.
This is it. This is real life, real conversations, everybody. this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, John, I love that. This, living authentically in alignment with yourself, your kind of true self. Getting into the true John Mailer then, tell people who are listening who may not have come across you before, what are you most known for, John? That what is authentically John Mailer?
Yeah. If we peel back, and I'd love to just start off by let going of the, I guess, the identity around, you know, business owner, you know, what I do, because it's easy to get wrapped up in who am I, is who I am, is what I do. And the reality is I'm a 59-year-old Australian male, father of a daughter, beautiful 17-and-a-half-year-old daughter, married for 28 years, known my wife for 30, a beautiful soulmate who I know we were destined to be together, someone who is reminding themselves of what it's like to live as a little child, a little boy, that sort of 6- and 7-year-old boy who just loves life, and it's a game, and someone who's remembering who they are amongst the whirlwind of living a life of, you know, married, the mortgage, kids, business, all of that goes on. So, you know, that the person sitting in this chair is on a constant journey to remind themselves of who they are, and that little boy who's on this, you know, on this planet this time around to have some fun, make a difference, and enjoy the journey. So that's who I sense the essence of who I am is. And I also have a beautiful business called ProTrade United that works with business owners in the trading construction industry around Australia and New Zealand. And we work with about 140 businesses, you know, working with the business owners and their leadership teams to, you know, the bigger picture here, Richard, is to shift the culture and the professionalism of the industry. And I'm not quite sure what it's like back in the UK or even in Spain, but the culture in Australia, it's notoriously toxic. The masculinity that sort of it's my way or the highway. And we've got a real challenge with filling, we've got a real shortage of quality skilled employees in this space. And a lot of it's due, my opinion is a lot of it's due to, A, there's a lot of options for the young people these days to go out and find a career, but the healthy culture that we'd love to create isn't there. And so, you know, a couple of years into an apprenticeship, they look, I don't know if this is where I really want to be for the rest of my career. So anyway, cutting the long story short is, we work with business owners closely to help them get their businesses on track, move through that journey to potentially exit, and also work with the individual owners and their leadership team to shift the identity of who those people are to then reflect it outwards as well.
Yeah. Oh, John, well, I love that. I love, firstly, how you almost reverse into this, and the temptation, as you say, to jump into what I do, being who I am, is strong. We all have a tendency to that, and I know you have a lot of self-awareness. We talked about how much work you have done for yourself to understand yourself over the years. So I love that. It's just a role model, the way we can describe, you know, who is the person sitting in this chair. The playfulness that you talk about, of the, you know, that young boy energy. I've got a boy of 6, so I know exactly that particular playfulness, curiosity, passion for life, passion for everything. And I do my best to tune into that too. And, no false modesty here. You've built an amazing business in ProTrade in Australia and New Zealand. And I know you were innovators in that market. You were market leaders. We were talking before about some positional shifts you're making, which I'm sure we'll come to in the conversation as well. And, you didn't mention it, but I'm going to mention it. And for those watching on video, it's just over your shoulder. You wrote an amazing book called Not Just a Tradie, which, you know, I really enjoyed reading for many reasons. One, the humanity of how it's written. And two, you know, so many how-to business books out there, but this was so much more. This was really the how to be I got from it rather than the what to do at its heart. So, you know, that.
Thank you.
I see this, you've spoken to, and we'll talk more about your mission to really shift the culture of something, you know, the trades industry. We might call it kind of the blue collar in the UK, the white van man is often referred to. very, very important people in our lives who, you know, we can have as a customer, sometimes a bit of a fractured relationship with sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And just to comment on that, you know, my belief is this industry is one of the most exciting industries to be involved with. You know, you think about the interviews they've had with the founders of AI, and when asked, they said, well, what sort of career would you recommend to a young person today? And the first thing they said was be a plumber. Yes. And I'm going, you know, you cannot think of a more exciting industry to be in, because you can bring in an AI and technology and VR and all sorts of things into the industry. But no one's going to, you know, come and unplug your toilet or, you know, re-roof your house or, you know, fix your switchboard. There's no robotics and there's no AI that's going to take place of that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely certainty and longevity. And, let's play a game that is generational, not just a 3 to 5 year strategic plan. Let's have a look at how we can really, you know, from a paradigm of, you know, how do we change the man in the van, the white van man and the blue collar, to something that, A, people want to join and be part of, but also the general perception shifts and changes as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a really important and beautiful mission to be on, John. And we're gonna navigate into that. You know, the subtitle for this particular series is, you know, Mojo Under Fire. And what I wanted to just dig in early for you, John, was, you know, those times in your life when that mojo that you talk about now, usually an 8, today you're riding at a 9.5, it's that authenticity, that living in alignment with your true self. When that hasn't been there, when you found yourself, you know, under fire, under pressure, in those hard places, you know, some of the language we use on the program that we work on together is the valley of despair that often a lot of people, a lot of men especially, will find themselves in when they're like, just what the fuck is this? What is going on? Why is this happening to me right now?
Oh, yeah.
And I know you can relate to that. Where have you in your life, or is there a moment in your life, I should say, where you really look at and go, this is where that crucible for me was. I went in like this and I came out differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I almost get a bit of PTSD when I start thinking back to the experiences of that time. And, you know, it's often said that men in particular have, you know, at some stage, the potential of one of three existential, you know, crisis. It's either a health crisis, it's a relationship crisis, or it's a financial challenge. Mm. And I had a double blow in one go. So I had a health and a financial challenge all happening at the same time. And I think that the financial led to the health, you know, challenge. We go back to the late 2000s, and if I can give some details around it, you know, my daughter was 6 months of age, my wife and I were running a business together, Danielle, my wife, and she'd taken some time out of the business. And all of a sudden I felt this weight that I was the provider for the family. It wasn't just, you know, and yes, we're a team, but I felt this weight to make sure that everything was going to be there for my daughter, Georgie, for Danielle. And we had this, you know, beautiful business. It was a business coaching organization, but was really dealing with, you know, any business that was looking for some support back then. We had a solid team. I think we had about 24 or 25 on the team at the time.
Wow.
And I'd just taken it all on, and I was not sleeping. We were under some financial cash flow challenges, and that's another story. But that was having me go, right, how do I fix this? I go straight into fix it mode. You know, I took on the responsibility. I was being the lone wolf. You know, we talk about in our conversations with men about how being the lone wolf doesn't work anymore. And well, I'd lived the lone wolf, and I know it doesn't work. And I was too proud to ask for help. You know, I thought that, you know, I've got a blue collar background myself before I got into, you know, the business coaching and advisory space. And, you know, it was, for me, it was harden up, you know, suck it up, work harder, get up earlier, stay later. So that was ingrained into me. And in a certain level, it can support you until it doesn't. Yeah. And so I was getting up early. I was staying up late. I wasn't sleeping. I had anxiety and panic attacks, and they just compounded on each other. And physically, I thought I was dealing with things. And, you know, one of the distractions that I'll speak for myself I had was, you know, let's not deal with a real issue. Let's jump on the push bike and go and cycle 100 Ks, you know. So distract by activity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't a drinker, but I was going, let's just get out of here. I won't deal with what I really needed to deal with. So physically, I felt well. And then my body just shut down. The short story is I woke up on a Saturday morning and I said to my wife, Danielle, I'm not feeling too well. I think if I don't improve by lunchtime, I'm going to head to the doctors. I jumped in the shower. I was having a shave, and all of a sudden I started feeling numbness down the left-hand side of my body. And I got out of the shower. I said to Danielle, I think we better call the ambulance. I think I'm having a stroke. So 5 minutes later, the ambulance showed up. We're off to hospital. My six-month-old daughter, Georgie, and Danielle followed in the car. And what actually came up was I wasn't having a stroke, but I contracted an autoimmune disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And it was a really rare autoimmune disorder. But what actually happens is we have the central nervous system, which really looks after the motor function of the body. And then we have the peripheral nervous system, which deals with all the sensory external parts of your body. And our nerves run through a myelin sheath, which is usually a fluid-filled minute little, you know, hose. And what had happened is my body had started eating away the myelin sheath. So effective was a nervous breakdown. My nervous system was breaking down. So we talk about the typical atypical nervous system, nervous breakdown, but this was actually a physical nervous breakdown. And so progressively through that day, I became 95% paralyzed, and I had a real fortunate incident where the neurologist came into the hospital. He did some tests. He said, I haven't seen this very often, but this is what I know you've got. And we started a course of treatment progressively over the next 5 days, which sort of stopped it and then helped it just get back on track, get the body back on track. Yet what happens is if you don't get onto it quick enough, the whole body becomes paralyzed. The lungs then start to malfunction because they don't have the nervous system around that. So I started, you know, being on the ventilator towards the end of the 5 days. And fortunately, everything kicked in. It was almost like the universe says, I think, John, you've had enough of a shake up. Okay. It's time to allow you now to recover. And I trust that you've paid attention because there were taps on the shoulders. There was things along the way, you know, accidents here and there and some illnesses here and there, but I wasn't paying attention. It was just like, let's just be the superhero. So, so 4 weeks in hospital, I think I lost about 15 kilograms and came out a figuratively shadow of my former self. However, learned how to walk again, learned how to talk again, learned how to feed myself again. Went to speech therapy and all of those things to allow me to physically get back on track. And at the time, I did ask those questions, why me? I'm a good person, you know. I think I'm doing the right thing in life. And I went into the whole victim mode, you know.
Yeah.
Poor little old me sat there and just went through that journey. However, I was also fortunate, you know, things also show up at a certain time to remind you that there are gifts in everything that occur. So my wife and I, interestingly enough, we just done a workshop a couple of weeks ago which talked about gratitude and how can you turn resentment into something that you can be appreciative for. And the activity in the workshop said, whenever you feel like you are resentful for anything that's showing up in your life, sit down and write out 50 general and explicit reasons why what you're experiencing is actually a great thing. And that happened 2 weeks prior. So here I am feeling resentful.
To the incident. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, 2 weeks prior to that. So here's Danielle. She comes in. She goes, okay, time to stop feeling sorry for yourself. Let's get a pen and paper out. We're going to sit down. We're going to write down 50 reasons why what we're experiencing collectively is a really great thing. You know? And so what I recognize in that moment, that any gratitude is the antidote to resentment. And whenever we're feeling resentful, whenever I'm feeling resentful, which isn't very often these days, the first thing I think about is, okay, I'm sure there's some appreciative moments that are going to come from this. I'm not quite sure what they are yet. And it helps just shift the energy. So that was really the starting point to the mental and the physical recovery, and just being appreciative for the experience we've had.
Wow. Wow, John. I mean, I'd had a sense of some of this because we've spoken before. I didn't actually know the full extent of the story, the severity of the position that you, you know, I say found yourself in, and almost as you're saying, created for yourself with the ignoring of the metaphorical taps on the shoulder, which is so the masculine trait, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Just, no. I can't possibly. I don't want to, or I can't take any time off. I can't look at that thing. I can't slow down.
Can't ask for help, because if I ask for help, that humiliation of actually admitting that I don't have the answers. My goodness, that was the thread that was running through my whole system at the time. Can't stop ask for help. You know, that's come to ask my parents for help, who were always going to be there if I needed them. I couldn't ask because, you know, part of my not good enough was actually proving something, wanting to prove something to my father that I was enough, you know, and I could cope and I could build a business and I could make it on my own. So do you think me asking for support from him was going to be on the agenda? Absolutely not, you know. So one of the benefits I've received from that experience, Rich, was I now see it so clearly in the clients that we work with. Yeah.
Right.
And the men I go, bang, that was me, you know, 17 years ago. I know exactly what you're experiencing. I know exactly what's going through your mind. And let me give you a little bit of a story.
Yeah, I mean, that level of it's beyond an empathy. It's an actual shared experience is so profound. And, you know, obviously as coaches, we don't have to have shared the experience. But I think there's something about, as you say, you know, I've been there. I've worked myself literally to the bone. I've had the actual nervous breakdown because I white-knuckled it the whole way and ignored everything, all the warnings, and I stayed insular. And solo, and that's where you're going, and that's where you're heading, and that must be, you know, that must be a profound support actually to your clients when you can tell your story that way.
Yeah, well, you know, as I shared, when I look back on that experience, it's one of the gifts that I've been presented with in my life. It's a real gift to have gone down that at the time. As I said, I've got a bit of PTSD. If I go back to it and physically sit into that space, you know, it brings back all of those emotions, the fear, the doubt, you know, am I on my deathbed? Is this the last breaths I'm going to be taking this week? However, turning it all around and seeing what gifts it has presented me along, you know, over the last 17 years, I go, wow, it really was one of the best things that could have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sense of the gifts, you know, when we think about the you know, the classic hero's journey, you know, and we've talked about the dark night, the soul, the descent, which you've described in, as you said, health and kind of from a financial point of view. And then that return is the hero actually returns with a gift or gifts to be of service to his community, to society, to culture, to his family. And there you are, you know, with them. And just hearing that. Also, I just want to reference, you know, your wife there as calling you forward. Because, again, the hero's journey is not something one does alone. And our loved ones, our most cherished partner is the one saying, come on, John. Stop that.
Yeah.
get out of that victim. That victim is not going to do any good. Let's create this list of gratitude.
Yeah, so true. You know, she's an incredible woman, and you know, it was almost like as soon as you know one man's down, she stands in. Okay, yep, I know Georgie's only 6 months of age, but let's go. And she had a similar philosophy that obviously something's going on for us to pay attention to. What is it?
Yeah.
Boom. Let's start here. Let's start here. And, you know, the people I've been I really love to share this, the benefit off the back of what I experienced was I go, right, one of the clients we were working with in the business college at the time ran an Ayurvedic practice. So she was an Ayurvedic doctor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I rang her and I said, listen, this is what's happened. And I'd love to, because I'm a big fan of anything alternative. You know, I know in the moment the modern medicine was amazing. Like I had an amazing neurologist. They gave me some medication. I was back on track, you know, within a month. Yet, okay, I've got to look at the bigger picture here to holistically look after this vessel. And she introduced me to this magical, you know, modem of, you know, Ayurvedic medicine, and took me down a completely new path of understanding my body emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. And it took me on a journey to a retreat in the September of 2009. And I think I may have told you this story, but I ended up bunking with this old guy who I thought at the time I was really upset and frustrated about, because I just wanted a room on my own. I thought, and now I've got to, you know, and this is me still recovering, still under my own space, yet he's now one of my best friends today, and it's Bodhi Aldridge. Yeah. So I look.
Our fellow guide and teacher, Bodhi.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I go, what a gift that is. You know, if I hadn't had that experience, then I wouldn't have met Bodhi. And you just look at the dots moving, joining backwards. I think, wow.
Yeah.
How beautiful that was. And thank you to, you know, the universe for bringing us together,
yeah,
you know, in such an unexpected way.
Exactly. Follow the breadcrumbs back. And, you know,
yeah,
people who have listened here before would know, Bodhi was one of my first guests on this podcast. It's actually how we met. We were introduced by a mutual friend, Rich Bellers. Thank you. And Bodhi came into my life and has, you know, helped guide and teach me and brought us together, yeah. John. Obviously, that's
I
how
know.
You got to know him. So a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a real gift. And, you know, that's one of the other. I keep looking at all of the things that have now shown up in my life, actually, because of that catalyst of that experience. So,
yeah. Yeah. And so that, you know, deeply profound. I mean, that literally is the definition of the crucible of going in, and it all almost, we almost did come apart. I mean, there's this saying, I think it's some sort of Jungian psychology, the negredo, the blackening, which is around this dark night of the soul. It's actually, it's almost that we have to go through something like that to fully, completely change. And it's, you know, can be, it's not an, it's something feels like a death of an old identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way. And it's really, really hard. And it can be the physical, it can be the mental, it can be the emotional, the spiritual, it can be all of them all at the same time. And really tough to go through, but so important and profound to have that experience. As you say, you found these gifts. And how do you see yourself as there was maybe John before and then there's John after?
Yeah.
Is that a real, that moment for you?
Yeah, well, if I look back and, you know, one of the things that I see, particularly when I work with, you know, our clients now, you know, back then the John, the limited ego was running the show in the head bubble 24/7. Don't want to feel too much, you know, just it's all up here. And I didn't know how to turn this off, this wild elephant of our thinking mind that was just running the show. You know, and every time I was awake, I sensed it needed to be turning over. So I'd wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, Georgie would be awake, I'd put her back to bed, and then the mind's going, oh, he's awake. Start firing off and wouldn't go back to sleep. And I'd create all of these problems, I'd go down all these rabbit holes, I'd catastrophize situations, and I'm just reflecting back, going, how incredible is it that the mind can, you know, create 95% of the problems that never show up in your life. And that and the limited ego was running the gig. And so if I look, that was really the start of, I'd done personal development work, but I'd done really the new old, well, we talk about the new old paradigm. We talk about the new paradigm of, you know, I create the whole of my own reality. The new old paradigm is, you know, I can respond when shit shows up in my life, but I didn't create it. Yeah. So I wasn't owning anything at the time. I just knew I'd been through this situation. And my whole training was, you know, when things don't, you know, show up the way you'd like them to, take responsibility, be responsive and move forward, but not actually own the whole thing. So what I got introduced to was this new, you know, through Bodhi and then through my teacher today, Lorna. It wasn't an instant transition. It wasn't, you know, going from the dark to the light. It was like, okay, I've gone, been to the dark side, and I've now got to transition out, and I'll go through to the gray, then back to the dark, a little bit brighter. Back to the, so it's not linear. And it's always been, since that stage, it's been a cyclical journey, because you can, I got caught back into the tracks. I got caught back into the thinking mind. I got caught back into the doing. And still do, but I'm catching it earlier than I did back then, because back then that was my default, and that's the only way I felt that you could succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
So through the gradual journey to who I am today, I guess today I tend to be more. We talk about be, do, have. I'd like to think that before I take any action, I'm more reflective on who I need to be first and foremost. And then I'll take whatever action I need to in any shape or form, whether it's running a business or working with my family or my daughter or my business partner, Jason. So I think that transition, and that's really the key part here, is learning how to love myself, all of it, you know, telling my whole truth to myself, and then being responsible for everything that shows up in my world. Consciously and unconsciously as well. So it's probably a short answer to a long 17-year journey, but that's probably the real shift.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so much in there, I think, for everybody listening, John, and especially when you said it wasn't dark to light just like that. It's a progressive change and shift, and one that is absolutely not linear. Oh. You know, there will be setbacks, and there will be resistance, and there will be, you know, I'd say a bit of grey, a bit of dark again, now a bit of light. I think it's really important to people to hear that.
And, you know, off the back of that, what I think is one of the illusions of this term awakening, you know, I think what I've sensed is people think, oh, I'm going to have this profound experience and I'm going to feel awakened and everything's going to be rosy and happy all the time. It is a friggin' messy journey. Awakening is not bliss. It is digging in and unpacking everything that is holding you back from showing up your authentic true self. You know, letting your love shine, letting your light shine. For what I had is this beautiful heart and this beautiful light, but on top of it was judgment and shame and resentment and blame. And humiliation and, you know, all of these things which were holding my heart from showing up and shining. And to work through and take those things off one by one. That's the messiness of metamorphosis. You know, I've heard you talk about the transition from the caterpillar to the butterfly, that gooey mess in the middle. That is where the work is. Yet it's not pretty. On the other side is where the magic happens.
So say more about that. So yeah, this the messiness of the change that's happening, and talk about the other side.
Yeah. So when we talk about this hero's journey, you know, the phases that, you know, we've openly talked about in our groups is we have the wake up call. You get this, you know, my wake up call was my illness. Yeah. The next stage that I think is really important is what I call the grow up. If you really want to transition and avoid going back to where you were, you know, it takes courage. You've got to show up. You've got to actually be prepared to do the work. You've got to be prepared to unpack everything that could be holding you back from your true authentic greatness. Yeah. And I'll speak for myself, but there's many men like us who have, since the age of 5 and 6 and 7, then had some conditioning or programming, and there's nothing wrong with any of that. It's just the life that we live in today that has given us the experience that we're not enough, and that we need, you know, and that we're in this world every day that keeps reminding us that we're not enough. You know, if you haven't got this, or you haven't got that, or you haven't made that, or you haven't, you know, done this, then what are you doing with your life? Yet, so all of that was caked on to this beautiful boy called John. And until I was prepared to actually grow up and emotionally feel what I needed to feel, then I would never do the cleanup work, which is the next part. You know, that I've got to wake up. But before I do the cleanup stuff, I've got to be courageous enough to feel my feelings, you know, to feel the judgment and the shame and the blame and all of those messy feelings, which are just there to be felt, and unpack what that is. And I've had a beautiful teacher, and also with Bodhi as well. My teacher, Lorna, has just gone there with me because she knows what's on the other side. And that comfort zone, that ability to actually go deep inside and unpack what's there. That's what I said a lot of men particularly, you know, avoid, because it's uncomfortable, it's messy, and, you know, there's a lot that can be cleaned up. And what I mean by where the magic happens is on the other side of that comfort zone, the other side of that resistance, that's where life really starts. That's where life begins. Yet you can see it in other people. And you go, geez, I wish I had their life, or I wish I was happy like them, or I wish I had, you know, whatever that is. And that comparison, our thinking mind compares and judges and relates. But I want to share with everybody, the joy and the peace and the love that I'm experiencing in my life today would not be there unless I'd done the dark stuff, unless I'd been that caterpillar pre-prepared to go through the gooey mess and come out the other side. And I've had some cheer squad along the way when I've resisted and held back and didn't want to go there. You know, there's been a cheer squad along the side. I said, come on, you can do this. You can get through this. And the magic is there when you get there.
I mean, that's a beautiful arc, a narrative. And I know, knowing you, I know how true this is for you. And we were talking just before, we were talking about, you know, the work, you know, men's work is called the work. And, you know, for a reason, because this stuff is necessary. You know, we can resist the call. We cannot wake up. That's the choice. I mean, that's the choice. Most people, most men will navigate through this life and either not hear the call at all, or more likely hear it and resist it. No.
Yeah.
This is not for me. It's too hard, too difficult, too messy. I'm not prepared to go through it. And what I loved that you were talking about, you know, you talked about your coach, Lorna, how, and you've invested a lot in your own development, and I think you said it's not enjoyable some of the time, at least some of the time it's not enjoyable.
Yeah. It's hard. And where it came up was I was sitting down with a colleague, and I invited him, you know, to do some work, invited him to, you know, one of the men's groups and have a chat. And he goes, it's okay for you, 'cause you enjoy this stuff, but I just don't. And I'm going, mate, I want to let you know, it's not enjoyable, but it's necessary. If I want to continue to understand who I am and show up and be the best, you know, tell the whole truth to myself and show up and, you know, I wouldn't say, I don't like the word to be the best version, because then you've got a comparison, but just be true to myself, for my wife, Danielle, for my daughter, Georgie, for my team, for my business partner, Jason, then it's necessary for me to keep going down this path. Otherwise, I'll be stuck back where I was. And the same patterns will keep showing up. And so I said, I said to my colleague, I'm going to invite you to come along, not because it's not enjoyable, but because there's going to be a difference in you. And then I just left it with him. So we'll see.
This is it. We invite guys. I often use the analogy of a swimming pool, John, with this. It's like, you know, we invite guys to the pool and they look at it, go, oh, that pool looks really refreshing. It's a hot day. I'd love to get into that pool. And then at some point they go, but I'm going to get wet. if I jump in, I'm going to get wet, aren't I? And that's a bit inconvenient right now. And this sort of constant walking around the edge of the pool. And you know, as I say to guys, like, you've got to, you know, I can't push you. I'm not going to push you in this pool. All I can do is draw you to the edge of it and go, there you go. What do you want to do? And then having people like you, John, telling your story of, you know, you fully dived in, you fully committed, you are fully committed, and what you're seeing. And just on that, you know, just to land it for people, and you've talked about, you know, family life and professional life, and of course they all as one. How do you see yourself as a leader, either be it at home or in business? How do you see yourself as a leader now, being the John that's sitting here that we're speaking about?
Well, I'll frame it this way. I'd like to think that you meet me and that regardless of the situation that I'm in, whether it's in my business or at home with my friends, you see the same person. There's no masks. Yeah, this is who I am. I've worn lots of masks in the past. I could probably rattle off a dozen of them. Yet, so who you see, what you see is what you get, regardless of the situation and the external, you know, circumstances or what's going on. And from a leadership perspective, because, you know, for me, parenting is the ultimate test of leadership. You know, every day something is going to show up that you didn't expect.
Hard agree to that. Yeah.
Something's going to show up, you know, and I have a beautiful, you know, teenage daughter who knows exactly which part of my buttons to push. You know, she's worked it out. She's worked it out long ago. And so how I respond to that in the moment, you know, and I'm not here to profess I've got it all sorted by any means. I'm still a messy human being and I've had to do some cleanup work with my daughter over the last few years when things have been shared that, you know, looking back, I wasn't proud of. Yet in the moment, I reacted. Yet, you know, parenting is the ultimate test of leadership and how I show up and how I would love my daughter to see me moving, you know, forward in life as she goes on her own adventure. And then back into business because, you know, business, as I said, I'd like to think I'm the same person when I go into my business if you were to come into my home. Yet I look back on the type of so-called business owner and I wouldn't ever say that I was back then I was a leader. I was a business owner and I was a boss. And I was scared. And I was scared that I was scared. You know, my real truth at the time was I was no idea what I was doing a lot of the time, but I wanted to pretend that I knew what I was doing. You know, so that whole fake it until you make it. That was the mask I was wearing. I wanted to pretend that I knew what I was doing. And the reality is I was just winging it a lot of the time, as we do as business owners when we're first starting out, you know. There's no blueprint a lot of the time for you to follow. Yet I wanted to give the perception that I had everything sorted. And so I was controlling and not in an aggressive way, more of a passive aggressive way, controlling, fear-based, wanting to look good. And I look back on that and I go, well, I needed to experience that to recognize that's who I don't want to be. Yeah. But today I'd like to think that my beautiful team that I work with, and I've got a couple of the advisors that we've been working together now for 16 and 17 years, that they're like my family and that I'm creating a safe space where my team can show up, be authentic, you know, own mistakes, tell mistakes, you know, make mistakes because that's what living's all about. And be okay with telling me about it as well, you know, because then we'll go to work on, you know, doing whatever we need to progress and move forward. So I think authentic, people feel, listen, I'm rambling a little bit here, Rich, but I think the number one thing is I like people to feel safe around me, safety from an emotional perspective. You know, I think I've sort of come full circle when I've talked about it all, but, you know, whether it's my daughter, whether it's my wife, whether it's my team, whether it's my best mates who I go surfing with three or four times a week, that they just know that they can be with John Mailer, feel safe, and know that he's got my back.
Yeah, John, I love that. I love the need to having experienced something else, been another way, because we all have, and we're changing all the time. and the ability to use that as perspective. Okay, you know, I have been controlling, fear-based in my life, and I choose not to be that again. And your choice, your awareness and choice that I'm going to create safety around me by being authentically John. I know it sounds just so obvious, but I don't think a lot of us really, really understand that. Maybe we don't get it, or we don't know how we might do it. But I think that is such a powerful call to kind of leave people with from the podcast. And, you know, this is what leadership can be. And I love also that parenting is the ultimate test of your leadership. As I said, hard agree. I get that. I absolutely get that, because our children are teaching us all the time about ourselves and therefore our leadership. And as you say, there's your buttons, Dad. I found another one. What are you going to do about that? So, love it.
Yeah.
John, I have had just a wonderful time having this conversation. I knew we would have a great flowing conversation. And just everything you've left everyone with, the insights, the truth, the wisdom. Just let us know, in terms of, you know, getting to understand more about you and ProTrade, what's a good way of someone finding out about you? So I can put some links in the show notes.
Well, listen, you know, full disclosure, I'm not on social media personally. I do have a LinkedIn profile.
Sounds healthy, mate, actually. That sounds very healthy.
And yet I don't post. I do have 13 friends on Facebook, and that's my family, and they're in the UK and in France, and I message them, and I'm not on Instagram, but for my business, my business has a YouTube channel, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of the socials to help, you know, people identify who we are and what we're about. So if people love to get in touch and have a chat and a conversation, listen, ProTradeUnited.com.au is my business, and with my partner Jason, business partner Jason, and it's just, I think, John@ProTrade United. That's the easiest way to connect with me. I like to keep it simple, that's it. Love to reach out, have a conversation, have a chat, and I think if there's one thing which I'd love to sort of pass on to finish off with is, you know, I heard you ask the question to one of your previous guests about what is your hope for, I think, the world? What do you hope for? And I listen to that, I go, you know, what a great question. I'm genuinely excited about life today and the world we're living in. Yes, you can focus on what's not working and, you know, conflict and drama, but I genuinely think that we're in the most exciting period of the human existence that we can relate to. There's always been conflict. There's always been drama. It's just get more attention today than it did previously. Like if you think back 100 years ago, what it was like living in Europe, I relate to that. And my grandparents are from Europe, so I know a lot about the history between in the early 1900s. And I think today, wow, how blessed we are and where we're living and the opportunities we've got and technology is there to assist us in so many ways. And I think with all of that, the key piece, I think, is can people remember who they truly are amongst all of it? You know, get back to remembering the essence of that you're a beautiful soul, you're lovable, you're valuable, you're amazing. You don't have to prove anything to anyone except just show up and shine your light. And if, you know, think about if everyone recognized that in themselves, you know, what would life be like? You know, what would that population be like to be existing and living alongside of? So I just wanted to add that because I've been contemplating that today because it's something that really, you know, had me question what do I hope for as well. So thanks for sort of prompting that in a previous episode.
Thanks for reminding me and bringing that in, you know, as we close, for something to take away, that hope, that optimism, that, and I go back to you talking about being, you know, this is my 6 or 7 year old self. Yeah, absolutely. We can do that. And I want to put more optimism and positivity out into the world. And this is a great vehicle for it. So John, thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast today. I've had a great time talking to you.
Yeah. Oh, listen, it's been a great conversation, and thanks for the invitation. And thank you for what you're bringing to the world, you know, your light and your love. And these conversations are, I think we're just getting warmed up, you know, with the work that we're doing. So keep it up, mate. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Love you, mate. Thank you.
Love you too.